pick a window. This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I am your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friend. On the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own James Tiberius Batman, Laird Jeff Bell.
I'm the guy that brings the dead folks to the show.
That's right.
That's what I do. I am here to wear you down. Yeah.
So yesterday we survived the Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
Jeff survived it more so than I. he was in the trenches. I was just over on the side, meeting people and
you were Switzerland. That's what you were.
I was the
Allied powers. And I guess that makes my customers the Axis.
In some ways, yeah.
But when you consider some of the pieces of abuse we took yesterday, you know, I know not all of the Germans were bad, but a lot of the Germans were bad. It was busy as shit. It was nice. Good day. Good day at the shop. I started my day waking up at 5 a.m. so that I could have some coffee and my morning constitutional before I brushed my teeth again and went off to the dentist to have a tooth extracted, because I am not in a tax bracket where we can repair these things, so we just tear them the fuck out. And then that started at 8, and it was creepy and weird. I walked into this building with an empty fucking parking lot. And the only lights that are on in this building are at the dentist. And I go into the dentist, and there's nobody at the front desk. And I can't hear anything, but the lights are on. So I'm like, I'll just sit and wait, because this is creeping me the fuck out. 10 minutes. And this girl comes out, just as nonchalant as can be. She says, "Hi, you must be Jeff. You're 8 o'clock. I was like, "Yeah, I didn't know anybody was here. I've been here for a minute." And she's like, "Great, come on back." "No, sorry keeping you waiting when you're the only fucking patient." No, none of that.
Yeah.
Regardless.
None of that.
Regardless. She's very nice. She was fantastic. Mm-hmm. She takes me back. We do the thing. You know, she brings in another nurse. We talk, this and that and the other. The doctor comes in. He's like, "Hey, okay, so here's what we're here for, and here's what else I'd like to do." And I said, "I can't afford any of that shit." He's like, "What?" I'm like, "I can't afford any of that. You just have to pull the tooth and send me on my way." And he's like, "Well, let's run it through your insurance." And I'm like, "My insurance will not cover anything you've said today."
No.
So they go off and check it. Insurance won't cover anything. So he's like, "Well, how about we just do a little bone graft? Just a little one. You know, you're going to need one there. It's important," and this and that and the other. And I said, "Is it extra?" He says, "Yeah." I'm like, "I can't. I had to save for a month to get this tooth pulled, you know?" And so finally they did it, and it took 20 minutes. And it was the first time in about 5 dentist visits where they haven't dislocated my jaw.
Right.
This dude had a soft touch. He was amazing. He was really nice, and I will go back to him again for the only reason is that he didn't dislocate my fucking jaw.
That's a reason enough. I mean,
yep.
Yeah, we'd gone to a dentist. A friend had recommended, because this dentist had discovered, the friend had been told by doctors she had neuralgia.
Right.
And in the face. And she goes to this dentist. The dentist said, "Actually, when they pulled your wisdom teeth, they didn't do a root canal, and you have gangrene."
Jesus.
"And it's up in your sinuses." So
yep.
She went through, this dentist did basically full oral surgery, got all the gangrene pulled out, neuralgia gone.
Yep.
And she'd suffered from this friend had suffered from neuralgia for like 10 plus years before this dentist discovered it.
So I'm like, yeah, who's that dentist? She sent it to him, to her. Of course, I hadn't been to a dentist for a long time, discovered I had a cavity. And I said, okay, here's the deal. When I was a kid, I don't like dentists because when I was a kid, he would give me a shot of Novocaine. And as soon as he broke through the enamel of the tooth, I would feel everything.
Yeah.
Like there's no, it was like I'd not gotten any Novocaine at all. And he would say, oh, you can't feel that. And he would just keep going, even though I'm just crying my eyes out, practically screaming as he's drilling into my tooth.
Yeah.
And I said, so if you could, I would like to not feel it. And I got like 3 Novocaine injections until it was like all I felt was the pressure of the drill. And it was so nice. But my problem was is that every other goddamn thing, my insurance wouldn't cover it.
Yep.
And they were not kind about it. The dentist's office.
Boo.
And both me and Michelle, we were like, we're not going back. And nope. I'm like, it sucks because I finally found a dentist who would listen to me and understand the one thing that keeps me out of dentist's office.
But his office staff sucks.
Yeah. There's two things that keep me out of dentist's office. One is the dentist doesn't listen. And two, the fucking dental hygienists that you deal with most of the time because they're always cleaning your teeth yammer endlessly. And I just hate it. I'm like, just treat my teeth. Yeah.
Well, I can't join you on that road trip. I like it when they talk. And
I like to be able to have a conversation. And when somebody's got an iron hook in my mouth, I can't have a conversation. So I'm like, if I can't talk, I'd prefer if you just did the thing and be done with it.
Quiet, woman. Speak not to me. Yeah.
Male, female, it doesn't matter. I just, bugs me. In fact, I'd take a dentist who doesn't listen to me as you know, that much, because I could always catch them on something. If their dental hygienist just did their job and let me go.
Yeah. No, I like to sit there and try and articulate words when I can't form words. And I turn it into a game to where they'll ask a question, which that's what cheeses me off. And this is why I started doing that, is they'll be like, how you doing with the thing with the thought of yada yada? Meanwhile, there's like 3 people in your fucking mouth.
Exactly.
And so I'll just go, I don't know that. And then they'll all pull their shit out and go, what? And it'll be an answer like, oh, I don't know how to answer that. Just for fun.
Yep.
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
Just for fun.
It's making the Bill Cosby routine fun.
You don't hear that anymore.
Yep. Sad, because that was a routine I always liked to listen to. But
Yeah.
That's the hard one, separating the art from the artist.
True.
Again. Yep.
True. Much harder with comedians.
Oh, much, much harder. Because they're personal. Yep. They talk about themselves. And there's literally a... Bill Cosby literally did a routine about Spanish Fly.
Yeah.
Creepy. About going on a quest to find Spanish Fly. And it's like, so he's literally done a comedy routine about drugging women to take advantage of
them. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I forgot about Spanish Fly.
Yeah.
That was. Let's see. Spanish Fly. Natural aphrodisiac or empty promise? The name for an extract of blister beetles, which are not flies and are not Spanish. The extract contains cathariddian, a chemical that has been used as a sexual stimulant for thousands of years. However, cantharidin can be fatal if ingested and may permanently eliminate sexual desire.
Huh.
So let me sum up. Not flies, not Spanish, can totally destroy your libido.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I have some? Hello? Can you give me some? Spanish Fly. Boy, that stuff was like a fucking, that was like a rumored grail as a child. Mm-hmm. You know, as a teenager, when you're just like, if I could just have some Spanish Fly, man, I could get bonked anytime I want. Nope, not real. And apparently, libido destroying.
Yeah, if you ingest it, it could actually kill you at the very least, destroy your libido.
Yep.
That's actually the opposite of what you want. I guess it's like topical.
One of those
thing? I don't know.
Side effects chants they do on the drug commercials, where it's basically like, here's the pill that'll fix your thing. May cause thing to fall off. May cause thing to spontaneously combust. May cause thing to, you know, diarrhea itself to death.
Exactly.
You know, oh, my favorite lately has been on some of these antidepressants where they're like, may cause a flesh-eating infection of the perineum. And it's like,
perineum. Like,
what? How did my liver medication cause my taint to rot? What the fuck?
I remember seeing that, and my first thought was, so it's a suppository.
What are people rubbing pills on their taints? I don't understand.
I'm like, how the fuck does that affect your taint? Do you just have like acid poops that just rot you away?
I think it probably happened to like one dude who had been to sub-Saharan Africa or something, and had caught a flesh-eating bacteria, but was also on the chemical trial, and they're like, oh fuck, we really got to add this to the list? He went to the jungle.
It was clearly his problem, not ours.
Goddamn guy running around the jungle, fucking wildlife, bringing back weird diseases, and we got to put him on the study medication.
Yep.
All right. That's enough of that. We should move on.
Enough fun. Yes, let's dive into some news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Oh, bring out your dead. That should be the new news sound. Bring out your dead. Ding, ding, ding. I'm not dead yet. Richard Tandy, keyboardist for the Electric Light Orchestra, one of the influences to their weird and futuristic sounds. You say futuristic sounds now. Yeah, sure. In the 70s and 80s, it sounded like that. But you listen to it now and you're like, oh, how quaint. It's like somebody playing a harpsichord. Yep. It's like, oh, it's like a piano, except annoying.
Anyway. Well, it sounds, you know, we've had synths for so long, it sounds dated.
Yeah.
Like I was listening to some Billy Joel that was, you know, I'm like, the song is obviously, or the music style is obviously influenced by ELO. And I was like, this is, yeah, who plays that sound anymore?
Yeah. Well, it's like going back and watching like Lady Hawk.
Yeah.
And the soundtrack was done by the Alan Parsons Project. And so you're sitting there watching this fantasy thing happen, and then the music starts up, and it's all like 80s backbeats and bass rhythms. So it's like, what the fuck am I watching Rutger Hauer going to electric guitars for?
I know. I was like, this music's more appropriate for science fiction than it is for anything else.
Anyway, Richard Tandy's dead, 76 years old, announced by former bandmate ELO leader Jeff Lynne, who wrote on social media, he was a remarkable musician and friend, and I'll cherish the lifetime of memories we had together. So I like ELO, though. I still do. They'll pop up on the algorithm at work, and I'll be like, oh, you know, which is nice. By the way, if I just have one little thing to say in the news about the algorithm on Spotify, Creedence Clearwater Revival and Pink Floyd should never be played on the same playlist. What the fuck is wrong with you people? You know, Jesus Christ, it's Pink Floyd, you know, Procol Harum, fine. Creedence? Come on. Just because they were in the same decade together doesn't mean they belong in the same genre.
Procol Harum. Yes.
Yep.
ELO would be appropriate.
Sure. Moody
Alan
Blues.
Parsons would be appropriate. Moody Blues would be appropriate.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I got bad news.
Uh-oh.
Speaking of the Moody Blues, Mike Pinder,
I know,
last surviving original member of the band Moody Blues, has passed away at the age of 82. His family's statement described him as a musician, father, cosmic philosopher, and friend, who lived with a childlike wonder, walking a deeply introspective path which fused the mind and the heart. Dude, you gotta do some pretty cool fucking music to get an epitaph like that on your way out the door. Yep. The mind and the heart. Aw. Yeah, I'm sure that's what the Vietnamese say about Kissinger. So, Terry Carter, Terry Carter, a MacLeod actor. You may have heard of him from something else. You may have heard of this gentleman from another little itty-bitty show from the 70s called Battlestar Galactica. Yep.
He was the original Boomer.
Yeah, he played Colonel Ty.
Yep.
On the original Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, that's good. Original Colonel Ty, that's right.
Yep.
Boomer was the other guy,
He was the other black guy.
The other black guy in space. They were more progressive than Star Wars. They had two black guys.
That's true. And they had their black guys before we got ours, unless you count James Earl Jones's voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll count it. All right, that's fine. You skip your racist tag for the day, Mr. Lucas. Anyway, he played Joe Broadhurst on the TV series MacLeod and Detective Colonel Ty on the original Battlestar Galactica. Died in his home in New York City. He was 95 fucking years old.
Mm.
He was Dominican, Argentine, and African American. He was the first black TV news anchor for Boston's WBZ-TV, Eyewitness News. He also became their first opening night drama and movie critic. He was one of the first black regulars on the 1956 TV sitcom series, The Phil Silver Show. This dude worked. Did a great job. I loved him in Battlestar Galactica. Every time he'd start talking, I'm like, this dude's got a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one, I think, hits the fandom even more, especially, you know, some of our younger, and by younger, I mean in their 40s, listeners. Bernard Hill, captain of the Titanic, and Theoden, king of Rohan in Lord of the Rings, has passed away. Breakout role was BBC TV's drama Boys from the Black Stuff, where he portrayed Yasser Hughes, a character who struggled and often failed to cope with unemployment in Liverpool. Died early Sunday morning. His agent confirmed. Oh, it's another one of those. Where's the family?
Yeah. Here comes the agent.
Yeah. It was an astonishing mesmeric. Oh, that's a fun word.
Mm-hmm.
Mesmeric performance. Bernard gave everything to that, and you could see it in all the scenes. He became Yasser Hughes, said Alan Bleasdale, who wrote Boys from Black Stuff, said that Hill's death was a great loss and also a great surprise. In this day and age, as I inch closer, 79 feels pretty fucking young. And besides that, the dude was a fucking great ass actor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really, really was.
Oh, no, I love
something exceptional. Speaking of exceptional actors.
Yes.
We're going to touch on this here, but if you want to hear more about it, jump over to The Left Show at theleftshow.com, where we go into the whole list of people. But for this show, it is important to note that Michelle Yeoh received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Joe Rosinette Biden. Yes, sir. Which is a lot neater and a lot easier to take and more inspiring to watch than, say, I don't know, Rush Limbaugh getting one. Because fuck that guy.
Right?
Yeah.
Fuck that guy. And fuck the guy who gave him one.
Well, don't. Don't do that, because that's how we make new ones.
So that's just how sexual harassment.
Yeah, don't fuck the guy.
That's how sexual harassment lawsuits get started.
Well, it's kind of like,
the motherfucker.
You know, on the Left Show, when we decided to say that cocksucker was not an insult, it's a hero. Salute. But a cockbiter is a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's like this. That's all I'm saying. It's how you use the phrase. Right? So instead of fuck that guy, be like, don't fuck that guy. Because he doesn't deserve it.
When you consider that the Medal of Freedom is effectively the way we give knighthoods out in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
there are some who've definitely deserved their knighthood, and there are some who have not. So, yes.
If there's not evil knights, what the fuck are you knighting for in the first place? Okay?
That's right.
Maybe that's
must
it.
Fight.
Maybe that's why Limbaugh got one.
Knight. Right. Yeah.
To give all the other ones, all the other Medal of Freedom winners can team up and beat the shit out of him.
That's right.
And then he went and died. You know, what, 4 years ago now?
Yeah.
4 years sober. And that is it for the news.
Okay, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're heading to Tinseltown.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner? I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Tell me. There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
So what have you been watching out of Tinseltown this week, Jeff?
Very little. I watched Wrexham.
Yes!
It's back. We got two episodes. That was fantastic. Mm-hmm. We got to see the bit when he came to America to play. Our Paul Mullen, our Super Paul Mullen, and ended up with punctured lungs because welcome to America, sport.
Well, now,
at least it was a British guy that did it.
Who were they playing? It wasn't Chelsea. It was the other team.
I think it might have been one of the Manchesters. I don't recall.
Yeah, it was one of the Mans, and they didn't put out their A team. They sent their rookie team.
Yeah.
And so that guy was overzealous, overenthusiastic, and you know, like the coach was saying, the manager was saying, that was an amateur move.
Phil Parkinson wanted him dead.
Yeah, like Parky wanted to kill him. Yeah.
One of the most enjoyable things about soccer news right now is just how brutal the British press can be. You know, they do not fuck around, and it is fun to read. And the fact that Parkinson was on the warpath because of Paul Mullins getting hurt. You know, I mean, it was beautiful, beautiful stuff to watch. The other thing that they do is they cover Wrexham more than they ever have before, and they do not do an article about Wrexham without Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney's name being in the fucking title, even though the article will have absolutely nothing to do with them whatsoever.
Yes.
You know?
But it's a way to get the algorithm to grab it, so it pops up further up the line. And then the second episode, it was like, well, the first episode they were really wanting to keep their new goalie, who was a guy who had retired and came back.
Premier League retiree who had started his career at Wrexham like 20 years before.
20 years before.
Yeah.
So they get him to come back, and he was killing it in their old division. And now they moved up a division, it was like he's just missing everything. And I'm like, boy, this is not aging well, Robin. Guys, because it's like, look at this. This is just coming apart. And then, he suddenly announces,
I'm old.
In episode two, I'm old, I'm retiring. And they're like, that was such a heroic move of his. I'm like, I just watched you guys in the first episode. Since you dropped both of them on the same day, I watched you guys in 20 minutes ago in the old episode going, oh man, we got to keep this guy. We got to do whatever we can to keep him.
And then Star Trek Discovery. This is their best season so far, and I'm including season two in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I am having fun in every episode. Season two was great. I really liked season two, but there were a couple of drags, you know, throughout that. And with this one, every single episode has been action adventure from the go, and I am here for it, but apparently not for much longer.
I like that the stakes are high in it, but I also like that it doesn't feel as dread causing as every other season,
especially last season with the big mining bubble.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just like
the black hole mining.
Which fucking billions of people die in this episode? It's heavy.
Yeah.
It's heavy, even though it's make believe.
Well, I mean, I think that's the best part of it is like we had the destruction in every single season. All the first four seasons, there was something that was like, if we don't solve this, you know, we have to solve this because everything has been fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, season one, it's the Klingon War that Michael started, but it's still the Klingon War. In season two, it's the AI that Section 31 uses that is basically taking over everything.
Yeah.
Season three, the burn wiped out all the dilithium. We got to figure out a way to solve this so that we can get back to it because the Emerald Chain's already on our doorstep.
Yep.
Season four, the singularity mining, you know, that was destroying everybody. This season, it's like, if we don't get this, everything ends. But things aren't, and everything's fine at the moment. We just got to get it. I like that idea of the race because it always feels like they've been on their back foot.
Yeah.
Every single season. And this one, it feels like as long as they can get there. And yeah, I expect you to have complications. I expect somebody to get a clue before them. I expect something to happen. But at the same time, you know, something to throw a wrench in the works. But at the same time, I'm really enjoying that I didn't have to watch an entire planet die in the first episode to get an idea of what the stakes will be, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, and in this one, you know, a lot of sweet moments. I really liked the kid.
Yeah.
The young lady. I thought she was great. And... you know, having been raised in a pretty overwhelming religion, I totally hooked onto that storyline and was like, just, I understand the peril here. I understand the dumbness. I understand, you know, the cult mentality. Mm-hmm. And so I just enjoyed the way that last episode progressed.
I also liked that it wasn't, we have to rescue Michael again.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. It was such a nice change of pace on that one. So yeah, I really liked it. This whole episode, I mean, and they bring up the Denobulans. So Dr. Phlox's race.
Oh yeah,
and that was fun. Yeah.
So, but that's all I managed to watch this week. It's been a busy week.
Yep. So I had Discovery and Rexham as well. X-Men 97. Magneto was right. You know, there it is. We're basically, I was so happy they didn't use Extinction Agenda as the title of the episode, but it's best, it's definitely Extinction Agenda. Yeah. It's Bastion, it's, you know, turning people into sentinels, it's all that stuff, and it's awesome. I mean, it's a lot of fun, but at the same time, I'm like, some major shit's gonna go down here before Extinction Agenda is done, I know that. Then I watched a couple of movies. I finally watched Argylle.
Oh, wasn't that fun?
On Apple. I enjoyed the hell out of it. And yeah. I'm very angry at all the critics who were like, oh, so predictable. I'm like, Kevin Hart and Dwayne Johnson made a movie where Dwayne Johnson was a member of the CIA and Kevin Hart was suddenly caught up in the whole thing. And it was a comedy. And it was extremely, extremely predictable. I didn't hear one of you motherfuckers ever say anything bad about it. You were like, it's so funny all the way through. Because you expect Kevin Hart to be funny all the way through. And here's this movie that is a comedy. It really is a comedy. And yet, everybody's like, oh, it's so predictable. We need a better spy thriller. They kept changing the stakes. I'm like, oh my God, it's a fucking comedy. And it was great. It worked so well. I had so much fun with it. And what's his name, the main dude? Sam Rockwell?
Yeah, yeah. He was fun.
He murdered it. I loved him all the way through that. He was so much fun in that.
I liked him. I liked fucking Cena. I liked, was it Dua Lipa? Was that who was in it, or was it some other?
Yeah, Dua Lipa was the keeper of secrets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we went and saw that in the theater, and I just, like I said, it's not a movie that changed my life, you know.
Nope.
It's not The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, and if you went expecting that, you're a moron.
I don't know what the hell you.
Yeah, it was just fun. It was a 90 minutes of I'm like hee-hee the whole time.
I like the twists all the way through.
Yeah,
those twists actually, a couple of them I'm like, what the fuck, Like when Dad walks in the house or in the hotel room.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And we see who, and I was like, oh my God. Oh my God, this is so cool. There's something else. There's a whole underlying thing we don't even know about now. And then we go through that. And then there's another layer of that. And I'm like, you know, this is fun. I'm enjoying it. And yeah, I'm like, I've seen this before in other films. And I'm like, it's more or less a send up of those. So fuck you for not getting it, critics of America.
Yeah.
I think it's got like a abysmal Rotten Tomatoes score. And they were going to make sequels of it. And I don't think they can now. So. Hopefully the author will continue to write the books. I haven't read the book yet, but hopefully she'll continue to write the books.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Yep. And then I watched a movie called Unfrosted on Netflix.
I'm not watching it. I'm not watching it. Fuck Jerry Seinfeld and his The Left is Ruining Comedy bullshit. Fuck Jerry Seinfeld. I'm not watching it. Anyway, go ahead.
So this is the story of the creation of the Pop-Tart.
Yes.
It is entirely fictional. It is every, because Jerry Seinfeld, despite his weird grandpa ramblings about the left destroying comedy, I mean, he really is. He's become, you know, your conservative grandpa in that way. And despite all that, he has so many friends in comedy. There's a moment where Bill Burr shows up. I didn't know who the fuck he was until the credits rolled.
Ah.
I did not know who the fuck he was. There's a guy playing Cronkite, and he later plays Carson, Johnny Carson, at the end of the thing, like a young Johnny Carson.
Mm-hmm.
No idea who the fuck he was. Yeah. I was like, but he was spot on, nailed the impressions perfectly. It was amazing, and the makeup, like he molded his face. I'm like, are you like a shapeshifter? Because his face just looked like Johnny Carson. It looked like Walter Cronkite.
Huh.
But yeah, Jerry Seinfeld knows all these comedians. Is it fun? And is it fun? Yes, it's fun. Is it funny? Eh. I mean, I laughed at a few of the jokes. I chuckled. But it's basically 90% dad jokes revolving around breakfast cereal and the creation of the Pop-Tart.
Okay.
So I would say it's lukewarm for me on that one. I don't care what Seinfeld has to say about, you know, the left is destroying comedy and he feels he can't do comedy because he's offending people. I'm like, dude,
I can't punch down because people get upset that I'm picking on people that can't fight back. I'm just going to go cry into my billions of dollars.
Here's the irony. They used to show, you know, little bits of his comedy routines on his show on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Because he is playing Jerry Seinfeld, the comedian. And they show him doing stand-up. And I was like, I'm going through my brain about all the jokes that they would show on a network television show. And I'm like, I don't remember any of those being particularly offensive or punching down. So I'm like, where is the comedy that I haven't seen, Jerry, that you feel you have to do? Because honestly, you know, do more routines like they put on Seinfeld and you'd probably be just as successful as you've always been. Or reinvent yourself like George Carlin and don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that was the thing about Carlin. He's like, I don't give a fuck. Everybody's a dumbass and the whole world is about to be destroyed. And I don't give a shit because I'm about to die. And that was his last bit of comedy.
Yep.
And it was amazing. The stuff that came out of that was like the best Carlin ever. And it was just, he became a nihilist at the end. And I'm like, Seinfeld, stop turning into your dad and just let this be. Just reinvent yourself, dude. It's not that hard. Yeah. Anyway, good times. I mean, if you want to see a bunch of comedians working together and just having it's basically, I'd call it a 90-minute SNL sketch. All revolving around the invention of the Pop-Tart. And with Seinfeld, he's the special, you know, he's the host that week on the show. So he's, of course, the main character. But everybody else is basically part of this sketch. And there literally are people who have been on Saturday Night Live and who are currently working on Saturday Night Live doing it. So there's a lot of improv. There's a lot of that kind of stuff. And just like with Saturday Night Live, sometimes the jokes land, sometimes they don't. So.
I want to throw out a little note before we wrap. Something else I forgot that I watched. So right now Netflix is doing the Netflix is a Joke Comedy Festival down in L.A.
Yeah.
And John Mulaney's down there for Netflix. And what he's doing this week, and it started on Friday and picks up again yesterday and a couple more this week, is doing live, some weird-ass live talk show format, weird thing that I don't quite understand what the fuck happened, but I laughed my ass off.
Nice.
You can do it live. Like the show had a theme, an L.A.-based theme, and last night's theme was on coyotes. And so they literally put up an 800 number and took live unscreened calls on people with stories about coyotes. And it was just funny as hell.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But Seinfeld was on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally almost turned it off because fuck that guy. Or don't fuck that guy. Yep. Don't fuck that guy.
Oh. Don't fuck that guy.
Yeah, no more fucking for Jerry Seinfeld. Go ahead. Go ahead. Make fun of transgender people, Jerry. You fucking dick. Do it, piece of shit. Anyway, Mulaney is one of my favorites and was just fucking hilarious. And giving the devil, the actual devil, his due, Jerry Seinfeld was very funny making fun of him. So, and then they bring in an animal wildlife expert.
Nice.
And they drop him on a couch in front of a live audience televised to who knows how many fucking people live sitting next to Jerry Seinfeld. You know, it's just like the guy couldn't finish a fucking sentence because he was so nervous. It was funny as hell. You know, that's got to be your thing. I mean, come talk about coyotes. Okay. With Jerry Seinfeld and John Mulaney. Oh, shit.
I've heard of one of them.
Yeah. So anyway, that's on Netflix this week.
Have to check that out.
Yeah, it was funny.
Sounds like fun.
It was weird, but it was funny.
So. All right, Jeff, what's the news out of Tinseltown?
Tinseltown news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Okay, this one cracks me up in a mad way.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. Utah used to be where people in America went to make cool movies, especially Westerns, because honestly, you can't drive half an hour here without everything changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a wonderful, wonderful place for geography. And so we've had, because Robert Redford has a ski resort here, the Sundance Film Festival has been here for decades.
Well, more to the point, he comes to Utah to make a cowboy movie called Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Heard of it.
Back in the 70s. And fell in love with the place. Came back for the ski season and got into skiing, and he bought a resort. Well, he basically bought a mountain and made a resort.
Yeah.
Called the Sundance Ski Resort.
Yeah. Which, by the way, has some pretty tasty but expensive restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just throwing that out there.
And then he was like, I'm going to make a film festival and bring everybody here. And through that created the Sundance Film Institute, which, you know, this, I mean, nobody's ever heard of the guy, but this young video store employee showed up with a script about a failed bank robbery, and he worked on it at the Sundance Institute until he had the script for Reservoir Dogs completed. That young man was, of course, Quentin Tarantino. And that was all at the Sundance Institute. In fact, they talked him out of making a much longer film they basically said, take the part about the botched bank robbery and make that into a movie. But he still had all these other gangster stories he wanted to tell. So he rolled those into a movie little movie nobody ever heard of called Pulp Fiction. Yeah. So yeah, that's the Sundance Institute. But anyway, meanwhile, what's going on at Sundance?
Sundance is out of here. Utah is too fucking difficult. Park City is too fucking small. Salt Lake City's over here going, we'll help. And the rest of them are like, nah, we've seen your legislature and your air. We're going somewhere else. So they're looking at, they've had offers from Atlanta, San Francisco, Santa Fe, and even more over a move. They're going to be here until 2026, and then they're going to go. Even Park City and Salt Lake City were just like, come on, stay. Yeah.
And there's, I mean, he isn't committing fully to it, but the fact that he's already said, I'm looking to go, it means he's saying, if you want me, if you want us to stay, you better fucking step it up.
Yep.
Is what he's trying to tell him. It's like, pretend it's the Olympics all over again and step it up. Legislature, stop passing stupid draconian liquor laws.
Take your bribe.
Stop. You know, build up the way to get up to Park City and back and forth in the winter so that it's a lot safer for people who want to drive. Because that's the other problem is, I went to the Sundance Film Festival one year when I was in film school. It was actually a course you had to take. Turned out to be a very expensive fucking course, because not only did you have to buy your own tickets to Sundance, you also had to drive back and forth. I spent like days up in Park City and then evenings down in Salt Lake City watching films. And it was like, there was even a couple of times, there's only one or two times I went to actual Sundance to watch a movie. But they would still had movies showing at the Sundance Resort. They had movies showing in Park, a couple of movies showing in Park City and then a lot down in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
So, and they still do that. And it's like, it's a long fucking trip for people who come up there, and it can be hard. I get it. It's too spread out. He'd rather have everything centralized if he could do it.
Yeah, why not?
Which is why Atlanta, even though Atlanta is one giant spread out area, it would still work a little better out.
Yes, but you can get a drink without a hassle. They've got really good food. And other than the fact that, you know, it is Georgia.
It is Georgia.
I mean, yeah, you've got Marjorie Taylor Greene on one hand, but you got Raphael Warnock on the other. So what are you going
to
do?
Well, I would say Atlanta is to Georgia like Austin is to Texas.
Or even Salt Lake is to Utah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, Sundance is looking to move because Utah is just fucking unfriendly to the movie industry. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. I mean, they are, oh my God. So everything shoots in either fucking, you know, Georgia or Vancouver because they are friendly to the movie industry. Movie industry comes in, even for a shitty film, will come in and blow millions of dollars into the local economy. What does Utah do? They tax it. They tariff it. And even when they pretend that they're going to make a move to making movies here, you know, better, they don't. They fuck it up. So Utah, which is the greatest place to shoot a fucking movie, we don't shoot movies here anymore because fuck you, Republicans run the show. Sorry.
Well, even the home of,
tune into the left show if you don't like it, but they're in charge.
Even the home of the movies, Los Angeles, made it so expensive to film there that even filming in the studios that were built in Los Angeles to make movies and television shows is too expensive.
Oh, well, they're fixing it. They're shooting there. Yeah, now
they're trying to fix it. They said, they've had to create this filmmaker tax cut that is unique only to filmmakers and only if you get special, you have to basically apply for, it's like you're applying for a grant from the state of California to get it.
Yeah.
And so it's a hassle. So like Paramount's still sending everybody up to Vancouver because they've got Paramount Studios up in Vancouver that are killing it.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
I'm watching that show, Tracker, and they keep putting him out in the woods, and I'm like, what's nice is it's all up here in the north. You know, they haven't sent him down to Texas or someplace, so everything looks like Vancouver.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. What else do we have?
Well, we have another movie festival here in Utah, in Park City. And Salt Lake.
No, we don't.
And
we did. We had Slam Dance, which is like the alt movie festival that often ran at least near to, if not concurrently. They've fucked off of Park City for Los Angeles because Los Angeles is being more friendly to them.
Yep.
So that's where we are with Slam Dance is gone. The Russo brothers. I like this. This is a nuanced take. The Russo brothers have basically pointed at the generational divide for lower box office numbers than superhero fatigue, because we're still going to see these movies,
right?
You know, maybe not as many of us, but a lot of that, the guys believe it's a generational issue. They say, I think it's fatigue in general, the superhero fatigue question was around long before the work we were doing, so it's sort of an eternal complaint, like always used to cite this back in our early days with superhero work. People used to complain about Westerns in the same way, but they lasted for decades and decades and decades. They continually reinvented and brought to new heights as they went on. So Joe says it's a reflection of the current state of everything. It's a difficult time right now. It's an interesting time. I think we're in a transitional period, and people don't quite know how they're going to receive stories moving forward or what kind of stories they're going to want. There's a big generational divide about how you consume media. There's a generation that's used to appointment viewing and going to a theater on a certain date to see a certain thing, but it's aging out. That's us, by the way. New generation is, I want it now. I want to process it now. And then moving on to the next thing, which they processed while doing two other things at the same time, Joe continued. You know, it's a very difficult moment in time than it's ever been. And I think that everyone, including Marvel, is experiencing the same thing, this transition. And I think it's really probably what's at play more than anything else. I fucking love that. That is so much better than, well, people just don't like superhero movies anymore. It's like, no, no, people are assholes and they don't know what they like.
No, it's true. And I agree with him completely about the generational divide. I mean, I've fallen into the, I'd rather just watch it at home if I can, than, you know, when I want to see it, I'd rather have it released same day and go see it. I see it in my living room rather than go see it in the theaters. There are movies I will want to go see in the theaters, absolutely. But I, to me, so in some ways, the cinema experience needed to, has always needed to advance itself, because our with 4K and everything, our televisions are capable of so much. There's no reason to, you need to have a reason for us to come into the theaters. That's all.
Yeah.
And honestly, I also read that article and said, well, what we really need is somebody to reinvent it, you know, like the Russo brothers did. There you go.
Yeah. Yep. Turns out Dwayne The Rock Johnson might be an asshole. He's doing a movie, or he shot a movie, 22 into 23, called Red One, which he played Santa Claus, apparently.
Right.
Anyway, sources close to Red One's production insist that Johnson was often late to the set, as much as 8 hours late on some days. One insider said the only thing Dwayne was consistent at was being chronically late. It was a fucking disaster. Dwayne truly doesn't give a fuck. Insiders also...
8 hours late?
Yep. Insiders also claim Johnson refused to work full days throughout principal photography, which took place between October 2022 and February of 2023, saying, quote, it's his absolute refusal to work more than a 4 or 5 hour day. It's a control thing. And you know what? That's the thing, man. When you behave like that, you're basically saying fuck you to every other person on that film, whether they be crew or they be cast. You're showing your wildly, wildly disrespectful behavior.
Well, and it's expensive, because if I'm a grip and I show up for work at 6 a.m., knowing I'm going to be working until 9 p.m., and I don't get to work, you know, I have to wait 8 hours for this motherfucker to show up so I can start working. You're paying me for those 8 hours that I didn't work. And every actor who shows up, you're paying that actor for those 8 hours that they didn't work. Everybody, the director gets paid. The only people who don't get paid are the producers who have to pay them.
Yep.
And to me, I'd be like, what were we paying Johnson? Okay, you let him know that every day, every hour that he's late, everybody gets paid out of his salary. Period. Because you know he's making millions. It's like everybody gets, we're using his salary to pay everybody for every hour that he's late.
Yep. That'd be a good one.
That's what I would have done. And if he said, fuck it, I'm quitting, it'd be like, bye, we'll find somebody else to take your part who'll show up to do our film. Yeah.
Yeah. Doctor Who showrunner confirms the upcoming season to feature heavy focus on progressive messaging. Quote, if you're not writing that in 2024, what on earth are you doing?
Exactly.
I love it. To the surprise of absolutely no one who's kept praised of either the current media landscape or the content of the series' recent specials, showrunner Russell T. Davies has confirmed that the upcoming season of Doctor Who will feature a particularly heavy focus on both progressive messaging and sociopolitical commentary. Yes! That's what I want!
Well, hopefully it's it's a little less ham-fisted than Chibnall's version of it, but I imagine it would be.
Fuck it. Ham that fist. Punch up. Yep. Kevin Feige told Hugh Jackman, don't come back as Wolverine. Also rejected Ryan Reynolds' first Deadpool 3 pitch for a more Rashomon-style film. So Kevin Feige confirmed to Empire that he originally warned Jackman against playing Wolverine again. I said, let me give you a piece of advice, Hugh. Don't come back. You've had the greatest ending in history with Logan. That's not something we should undo. That's not a bad point, but if this were like another, you know, X-Men Origins Wolverine 2, yeah, definitely say no. Absolutely
say
don't.
No. Yeah.
Don't go. Was that Fox or was that Sony?
That was Fox.
Yeah, don't do a Fox movie, but do a Ryan Reynolds movie? Are you shitting me? It's going to be fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Well, it's when he came to him, he said, well, it's not going to be the Wolverine who died in Logan. That story's done. This is a Wolverine who is from a different timeline.
You built this multiverse, like, Kevin.
Yeah, which Feige's like, oh, multiverse. I understand that part.
I got to put on another hat. Anyway, that is it for the news.
All right, another break, and when we come back, we're talking comics.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
All right, Jeff, how's it going with the fundraising?
We could use a little more. We're almost at halfway to our goal. And it's been a long slog. We're in fucking April right now. Normally I give up after about 2-3 weeks. This week I'm just gonna keep pushing it. I know there's somebody out there that wants to help bridge the gap between halfway and full. I just know it. And for what I'm giving away, you know, with that amount of money, you know, it's a pretty big package. It's a $4,000 package I'm giving away for $1,500.
Right.
It's just a matter of trying to put enough together at this point, now that I've bought stuff that we need, to make that last push so that I can pay that rent for months ahead and get everything flowing. So if you go to thecomicbookpodcast.com and you click on the fundraiser and you give there, scroll down a little bit and you can see that there are added incentives to the fundraiser that we are doing this year. And it is labor intensive and it is pretty big. And I am pretty proud of the fact that this is what I came up with to give back to people that give to us. I've had one person qualify two people qualify for gift packages. And they have not responded yet to my, hey, what would you like? Because they were either ors. So to those two, let me know, will you? I feel like I owe money to somebody and I haven't paid it back yet, and it's a feeling I'm very uncomfortable with. Otherwise, for those of you that aren't part of the Patreon squad, it's thecomicbookpodcast.com. Just click on it, you know, go through, see if there's something in there you like. And if there's not, but you know that I do it, reach out. I'll make deals. I will do anything pretty much without selling my soul. You know, I would sell my soul. But I won't. I'll sell my soul, but
I've tried doing that for years. Nobody's buying, so.
It's one of the reasons I'm an atheist, by the way. It's because my soul has been up for sale for an awful long time. And if the devil were quite that thirsty, he would have picked up on this by now.
Yep.
So while I would sell my soul, I will not sell out my principles. So if you're a rabid-mouthed MAGA, you know, and you think that you can give me money to trick me into making you a podcast, mm-hmm. it probably won't work. Let's move on.
Yep.
Let's move on.
Well, let's do some comic book news.
Comic book news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
So, okay. Sometimes the setup for a story that turns into a joke is big, is huge. That feeds, if you will, into the narrative of headcanon that some of us dirty old men tend to have. So I'm going to walk you through this headline really quick, okay? And I want you to see where I got excited and to where I got kicked in the nuts. You ready?
Yes.
Margot Robbie and Olivia Wilde are bringing... Okay. If you were to put some famous people together in a situation, there are two people together that I would now like to see more than anything else in the world, and that's Margot Robbie and Olivia Wilde. They can hold hands and fucking skip for all I care, but the two of them sharing a screen together, Jesus Christ, that's pretty. That's like Bryce Canyon pretty. You know what I mean? So yeah. Margot Robbie and Olivia Wilde are going to make a movie together. Oh, my God, that's so great. I'm so happy. That's good. Yeah.
Excited.
It's Rob Liefeld's Evangeline.
Nothing like Evangeline.
Let's just...
Not even Evangeline. Evangeline.
Evangeline. Let's just grab something from your back catalog that nobody gives a flying fuck about and stick two of the hottest actors in Hollywood in it. Oh, fuck. Who keeps encouraging Rob? Really? Does he really pass out fellatio at that skill level that you guys keep throwing money at him?
Apparently it's Margot Robbie, because she's the one who said it's her production company that's like, I want to do this. So somebody pitched Evangeline, and they must have pitched it in the way basically that it's like the way Rob Liefeld describes it, which was, it's sort of a Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets John Wick. There's a redemption story. She's a fallen angel. And I'm sure Margot Robbie's like, now wait, tell me some more about this fallen angel. And then that becomes the thing. And they barely never once mentioned the guy who couldn't draw feet in the 90s was the guy who created it.
I make pictures with lines. Yeah, I'm Rob Liefeld. Hello.
I'm Rob Liefeld.
I work
fly
for
buttons.
Hugs. Yeah, no doubt. Anyway, that's coming. That's coming. I'm sorry. You know what? You know what'll blow my fucking mind is if it's good.
Oh, I...
And I go...
I can imagine it's going to be good, and you're going to have the few remaining Rob Liefeld 90s fans who are going to be like, she changed it. It's not the same. Good.
Oh, see, that's I can handle that. I can handle that.
Like,
that's
good.
I thought it might be good enough to make me check out the back catalog, at which point I'd be like, no, don't Rob Liefeld me. As we know, and we have talked about, this is more like a, hey, pop over to the website and read this article and watch this little video. But Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ends with issue 150. They will launch, IDW will relaunch TMNT with a new comic, a new number one, in July 2024, written by Jason fucking Aaron. Jason fucking Aaron. Like, you know, when he took over Thor from Matt Fraction, I had a panic attack because I really didn't know his stuff very well. And then it turned out that he's better than any other fucking Thor writer to ever pop up. So am I looking forward to him and his take on the Turtles? Hey, Last Ronin made me actually like Turtles. So we'll see. We'll see.
And you may be wondering, how does a 40-year-old comic only have 150 issues? It's because there was a suspension for a while where the two of them weren't doing the series. And then it got picked up in different ways because of the movies, then the animated series, everything. And finally, they get to the, only recently, and it was Kevin Eastman coming back and saying, "Okay, let's do it again, but I want to oversee it." And they picked it up from where the last issue of Ninja Turtles left off, with the story continuing the way it had. So that's why we only have that's why we have 150 issues there. Yeah,
that's it for the news.
Well, let's do some reviews. What did you read this week, Jeff?
Not a goddamn thing. I was busy running a comic book shop on the busiest, getting ready for the busiest day of the year.
Yeah, the Black Friday of comic book stores.
Yeah, it's nuts, man. Black Friday has nothing on fucking Free Comic Book Day. Though I will admit, Free Comic Book Day has nicer shoppers.
Yes.
Than Black Friday does. Because Black Friday, everybody's just kind of like, here we go again. I guess I got to be a dick. So they do that. Whereas with this one, for the most part, look, one of my favorite things, and we'll talk about this in Patreon, you know, is little kids.
Yeah.
And I love the little kids. I adore them when they come in. I have a lot of fun with them. Mm-hmm. You know, and so those parents seem to appreciate it when a retail person is nice to their children.
Yep.
You know, and so that works out. So I
didn't
read
anything.
There
was one kid I was concerned about, but we'll talk about them in Patreon.
Yeah, so. I know which kid you're talking about.
Yeah.
He's a good kid. Anyway, I didn't read anything. What did you read?
So this week we've got the Blood Brothers Mother, Brian Azzarello, out of Distillery. So, of course, I get the giant oversized magazine-sized book that's perfect bound. So you have to be – it's. I don't like these because you have to be so careful. It's like when they're magazines, like when I'd get the early Savage Sword of Conans and that kind of thing. You could open them up, you know, they were just saddle stitched, so you could just open up and read them. These you have to be, you don't want to over crease the binding or anything, so you're having to be gentle. I was like, makes me crazy. But this is a great Brian Azzarello story. It's a Western, which is what he's best at. You start with this first group of people and you think, okay, so this is the three characters because they're on the cover. Then you find out, no, it's three kids who these three characters affect. These three adult male characters affect is these three kids and how that's going to move forward. And I'm like, and he's going to have to do this. And if Distillery is holding true to form, he's doing this in three issues, you know?
Yeah.
Space Ghost, number one. Okay. First of all, hitting right out of the park with this, with the origin story for Jan and Jace, which they'd never really done in a way that was satisfying for me. They were always just his sidekicks. They were always just there, right? And in past iterations of Space Ghost or trying to explain them, they were basically junior officers for the Space Patrol or whatever that he was a part of at one point. In this, they're literally kids who are raised by a scientist to be really super smart and really super tough. And their father gets killed. There's this whole thing, and Space Ghost rescues them. And that's this first issue. And I was like, this works so well. And Space Ghost is just basically Batman in space. He's big, angry Batman in space.
All right.
At this point. And I love it. It's really good. Well worth checking out. Get Fury, number one, from Garth motherfucking Ennis as the writer. Yeah, we got some Vietnam stuff that, oh boy, you knew that it was brutal in Vietnam. People saw some scary fucking shit in Vietnam. You know, soldiers who come back, they're like, I've seen some shit, and they just, that's all they say. But yeah, this is the shit they seen is what Ennis and Burroughs put into this book. And Jason Burroughs is in a lot of ways the spiritual successor of Steve Dillon. He's not quite Steve Dillon, but he's got that mastery of that kind of fucked up world that Garth Ennis likes to write that Steve Dillon could draw so well. So yeah. This is a really good book. This is really cool. And it's old school. It's Frank Castle and John Wayne looking Nick Fury, basically. In fact, they may even make a couple of John Wayne references that are hilarious. Like Nick saying to somebody, this ain't no John Wayne movie. And I'm like, I can almost hear him saying it in a John Wayne voice.
There you go. Yeah.
Blood Hunt from Marvel. Jed McKay. It's been building up to this for a while. You've got, so we start out with, basically, we saw this at the end of the last issue of the Avengers. all of a sudden the world just started getting covered in darkness. And it's because all of these people who have access to the Dark Force get basically taken over or unraveled by the vampire nation, and it turns the world dark. It blots out the sun. And then as soon as the sun's blotted out, it's a massive vampire attack. Massive vampire attack all around the world. And it's that, you know, basically the Avengers are like, this was planned. And it turns out Blade might be involved in all this.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah. What he does at the end of the issue to Doc Strange, well, we'll be talking about that in our picks of the week this week. So, yeah, it's... I'm kind of into it. I mean, I like the whole... It was a concentrated attack. Everything just went nuts. Hunter's Moon, which is he's the only Moon Knight left because Mark Spector's quote unquote dead in the Marvel Universe, is like, I have no access to the moon now.
Huh.
And so that's a problem for him because the moon actually gives him extra strength and extra power, just like it does for Mark Spector. So yeah, no access to the moon for him, no access to the sun. And basically, you know, they attack the Impossible City that the Avengers live on, floating in space. They attack New York, they attack everything, and everybody's taking it on. I think Blade's got a much wider plan that we don't know about, but at the moment he's being cast as the villain, and I think he's doing that intentionally.
Yeah.
I think there's something else he's doing here. And that was it. That's what I read this week. Oh, I did read a whole stack of the free comic book day offerings, but we will talk about those in Patreon.
That's at patreon.com/dfenmedia.
Yep.
That's where we do it.
That's where we'll do it.
Sweet.
But in the meantime, today's Tuesday. That means tomorrow's Wednesday. It's time to give our picks of the week.
You only say hello so you can say goodbye. These two words must make your life complete. You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
All right, Jeff, what are you looking forward to this week?
We can start mainstream, I think. That's fine. Yep. No one's gonna judge me for that. J. Michael Straczynski's Captain America Volume 1 is finally coming out. This is collects Captain America 1 through 4 from last year. I've heard nothing but good things about the run.
It's been nothing but good.
Yeah, and unlike
the current storyline is a little weird, but otherwise the first storyline was really good.
Yeah, yeah. So, and unlike the last Thor trade paperback that came out at $40, that was just teeny tiny. This one's only going to run you $20. Which is just barely $10 too much. So for Marvel, it's a bargain.
Mm-hmm.
The Boy Wonder. I'm gonna give old Damian Wayne another shot.
Mm-hmm.
Only because Junie Ba is writing it. I think my problem with Damian Wayne has been that writers get weird with him, and I don't really appreciate it. I don't really like it. So, you know, every once in a while he does the thing. Like, for any writer seems to be able to have figured out the relationship between Damian and Tim.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun, and I like reading it. But when it's just Damian and Batman, I don't give a shit about Damian. But there's rich potential there, and this looks like it might be what I've been looking for to finally decide that I like Damian Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my thought.
There's a level of Damian and Dick work really well together. Until recently.
Yeah.
Same with, whereas he and Tim were always seem to be at each other's throats. Because, you know, Tim wasn't giving up the mantle of Robin and Damian felt that he inherited it. And then he went to Dick and he's like, you don't get to be Batman when Bruce dies. I'm Batman. And Dick's like, I never expected to be Batman. Well, you were Batman when Bruce was dead for a while. That's because one was needed. I'm going to be Nightwing forever. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's an animated a Teen Titans animated where Damian Wayne joins the Teen Titans, and it was the best I've ever seen Damian Wayne written.
Cool.
In an animated series, so, yeah. Because they had to make him likable, and you had more than one writer trying to figure out how to make him likable, so that worked well. Yeah.
Yeah. What about your mainstreams?
So for Marvel, boy, I'm spoiled for choice with a lot of Bloodhunt stuff, but the one I'm really looking forward to is Doctor Strange, number 15, which is picking right up from what just happened at the end of Bloodhunt, so holy shit, can't wait. What's nice is that, for the most part, I'm reading, I read Avengers, I'm picking up Avengers, I'm picking up Doc Strange, so I would think most of it's going to be covered. And they shouldn't be pulling too much from the main story. I also like the Bloodhunt's going to be over in just a couple months. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the best part about fucking Night Terrors is that it was quick.
Yeah. Yeah, they're putting out two issues a month for Bloodhunt, so, and then it should minorly change the Marvel Universe a little bit. Maybe there won't be as many. There certainly won't be as many Dark Force wielders, I would imagine.
Yeah.
We'll see who they let survive and who they leave dead. And then for Marvel, I was also picking Boy Wonder because it just looks so good. Primarily because of Junie Ba. I think this is going to be one of those where I'm hoping. I don't want to say I think it. I'm hoping this is going to be one of those where I read it and go, yes, this is who Damian Wayne is supposed to be. And because it's kind of telling his story again, but from a fable sort of standpoint. And I like that idea. Yeah. That'll be cool. And then my independent picks this week IDW Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, number 6. This is finishing this amazing story by Patrick Horvath, who is writing and drawing the book. And Richard Scarry meets Dexter. It is such a fucking cool book. I'm very, very excited about this ending. So, yeah, look forward to that. And then from Valiant, we were talking about her last week. We couldn't remember the character's name, which is sad. But Faith is returning. And Faith was always my favorite idea for a hero. So, yeah, Faith is coming back. Jody Hauser writing. How about you, sir? What's your indie picks?
I am also jumping on the Faith Returns bandwagon. I enjoyed her run several years ago when she was the flavor of the quarter for Valiant. So we'll see how that goes. And then Transformers Volume 1 out of the new Energon universe that's being run by Kirkman. This one collects Transformers 1 through 6. The writer was Daniel Warren Johnson. I'm not a Transformers guy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's barely after my attention span. I can Autobot roll out like the rest of them. I enjoy that. I've seen most of the fucking movies, even though they put a Wahlberg in them. You know, all you can say is at least he's not a LaBeouf. But enough people have really gone on and on about how good this is that I think this is a good way to get started into it. The way Image does this, as opposed to like Marvel or DC, this thing's coming right out. I mean, it's right here. So you'll be able to pick up with grabbable issues to do the ongoing at the comic book shop. So I'm going to go with Transformers number 1, volume 1.
Volume 1.
Yeah.
Trade paperback.
From Image for $16.99 with 6 issues in it, as opposed to Marvel's 4 for $19.99. I'm just saying, Marvel. Good Lord. Know. You have enough money.
Image makes such a good price point of their trades, and they sell very well.
So many of their early trades, ones and twos, so many of them are $10.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they know how to get you. They get you, they hook you, and you go from 10 to 17 as opposed to 10 to 40. You know? Anyway.
Yeah, no.
I like
it. With you.
Yeah. But that's what I'm reading. That's what I'm going to read this next week.
Well, let's jump into our TARDIS and head to July and give our picks of the future. are you looking forward to coming out in July, Jeff?
Okay, I can't really explain why I want to read this. It's the Port of Earth Deluxe Edition hardcover. I don't know that I want the Deluxe Edition hardcover because I know nothing about this story. What I know is that it had a very interesting poster hanging at the nerd store. I have never read a goddamn drop of this thing, but that poster lives rent-free in my head. And now that this is collected in a deluxe edition that, frankly, unlike Marvel and DC, is in the affordable realm at $45 versus something like this that would come out from Marvel or DC that would be $125. Mm-hmm. No, I can't afford it, but I want to. And I think that's what it comes to. And that's Port of right. Earth Deluxe Edition hardcover coming out in July in store on the 17th.
Nice.
Yeah. What about you?
For me, it's Absolute Power number one coming from DC Comics. They dropped a thing for Free Comic Book Day. We'll talk about that in Patreon. But this is basically Amanda Waller is teaming up with Failsafe and the Brainiac Queen, which is going to be the next Superman arc that comes just before this. I think it starts this month, is the Superman Brainiac thing. So she's teaming up with them. And they're building a bunch of Amazos that have different superpowers already built in. Rather than where Amazo would copy powers, these will be already built into them. And she's using them to basically spank every superhero on Earth pretty hard. But this is Mark Waid writing it, so it's going to be good no matter what. And yeah. I'm looking forward to this idea. Plus, there's going to be this really cool origins story by John Ridley giving the origin of Amanda Waller. By John Ridley. John fucking Ridley is writing it. I'm like, I got to read that too. So, yeah. Looking forward to Superpowers, or yeah, Absolute Power coming out. But that's it for this week. Anything else?
Nothing I've got. Okay. Yeah, I'm all stupid in the head from Free Comic Book Day. So
yes,
yeah, it was probably important.
Remember
shit.
Remember our fundraiser. We still need to raise some more money. The good news is every dime we raise, we get to keep. It's not like Kickstarter where it's all or nothing. So just get on over there, help us out however you can. Jeff's got some really good incentives if you're a high donor. You can get some marketing help for a business you're running at a fraction of what you'd pay somebody else for by just donating to our fundraiser.
Double the quality, a quarter the cost.
Exactly. And then I would remind everyone to, we would love you to join our Patreon squad at patreon.com/defendmedia. Join us there. Every week we have additional content. We've talked a little bit about, we kind of gave you a high-level version of what we did for what happened to Free Comic Book Day. This on Patreon this week, we're gonna give you tales of the Free Comic Book Day. And I've got a stack of free comic books that I've been reading through because they're quick reads. They're usually like half a story, half a book. But yeah, I've read through these, and I'm like, I want to talk about some of them. So that's this week on Patreon. So join us, won't you? Patreon.com/defendmedia. In the meantime, I'll say, as I always do, until Blade starts a vampire invasion, make mine Marvel.
For Asgard.
For Stan.